Hello, everybody. My name is Julian Chang. I'm one of the leaders of the member-led forums here at the Commonwealth Club, and it's my distinct pleasure to welcome you. Normally, I would have a gavel and a podium, and so this will have to do as an opening. I want to extend a special welcome to our new members today for the Commonwealth Club. As Alyssa has said, membership comes with privileges, and we're delighted that all of you are here, regardless of your membership status. At this point, I'd like to ask you to turn off noise-making devices, pagers, phones, any other thing that may make a distraction during our time together. We are delighted today to present to you a very special program, Speaking Tips from America's Best Speakers, Abe Lincoln and MLK. We have got a very distinguished panel of speakers of two today. It is my pleasure to introduce them to you right now. Dr. Carol Fleming is a personal communication coach in private practice in San Francisco, actually just across the street here, and she coaches both men and women in becoming more successful communicators through work in speech, voice, language, and nonverbal issues. Her book, It's the Way You Say It, Becoming Articulate, Well-Spoken, and Clear, will be available at the book table immediately after this presentation this afternoon, and Carol will be pleased to sign copies. It's an excellent gift for graduation and bar mitzvahs that you may have. Carol is on the board of governors here at the club, and she is the chair of all the member-led forum programs, and she does a fabulous job because the member-led forums produce half of all programming here at the Commonwealth Club. Our other speaker, Rick Gilbert, is the founder of Power Speaking, Inc., a speech communication training company located in Redwood City. Power Speaking delivers over 300 programs a year nationally and around the world. Before starting Power Speaking, Rick held management positions at Hewlett-Packard and Amdahl Corporations. His coaching of over 200 senior-level executives led to the creation of the award-winning video-based training program, Speaking Up, presenting to executives. It features video interviews with 21 C-level executives about how to present effectively at top-level meetings. His new book, Speaking Up, Surviving Executive Presentations, was published in 2013 by Barrett Kohler, and it is also available after this meeting at the book table. And Rick is pleased to sign copies for you. Without further ado, welcome Rick and Carol to the Commonwealth Club. Thank you. One more housekeeping item. At the end of the presentation, there will be a question and answer period, which is the norm here at the Commonwealth Club. We will be taking questions today from that mic stand, so please line up in that aisle if you have a question when the time comes. Thank you.
And thank you, Julian. And thank you all for being here today, this November afternoon of 1863. Where we've gathered for a solemn dedication of this precious land where 50,000 of our citizens have died. We are going to hear today the greatest speaker in America, the person you have come many miles to hear, who brings the authority and the solemnity for a proper dedication of these many honored dead here in Gettysburg. Let us hear what our speaker has to say.
Standing beneath this serene sky, overlooking these broad fields now reposing from the labors of a waning year, the mighty Alleghenies towering before us, the graves of our brethren beneath our feet. It is with hesitation that I rise my poor voice to break the eloquent silence of God and nature. But the duty which you have called me to, grant me, I pray you, your indulgence and your sympathy.
We're not going to do that, excuse me, Dr. Everett, if you would take your seat, because he goes on to talk for over two more hours. as was the oratorical style of that time. So don't feel sorry for those people. This is what they came to hear. And Edward Everett was the man of the hour, and they were pleased to have him at this dedication. And following the two-hour oration, much in the style as you have just heard, there was a hymn, and then they had this fellow get up for just a few appropriate remarks. Abraham Lincoln came on at this time and delivered himself of just 272 words. So Edward Everett was the backdrop for these words. Did you want to say anything there, Rick?
Lincoln introduced a new thing to American oratory. It was brief, distilled, historical meaning of the national purpose that became America's prose poem of our identity. Let's listen.
67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It's altogether fitting and proper that we should do so. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this land. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here. It can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, to be here dedicated to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be dedicated here to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom. And that government of the people and by the people and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
You know, as different as Lincoln was from Everett, our speakers today are different from Lincoln.
What do you mean by that, Rick?
There have been a lot of changes over the years, and as you begin to look at this, it's fascinating to see them. One is, for example, the use of the personal pronouns, where today a speaker is likely to talk about their personal feelings or their own stories, where back in those days, because of the style of oratory that they did, that would never come up. In addition, the speaking that goes on today is far more conversational. And then, of course, there's things like electronics, like amplification, microphones, and, of course, our good friend power speaking. How could we just imagine how much better the Gettysburg Address or the I Have a Dream speak would have been with PowerPoint? As my first slide shows you,
yes.
67 years ago. Well, maybe not.
No. You would probably said 87 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. As Rick said, we have electricity. We have so many advantages for the contemporary speaker, which they did not have. So you understand, we have no recordings. There wasn't amplification. There was none of these things for them. They had to do their communication with the best tool that they had, which was what? Their voice. Exactly so. So let's take a look at what we know about those voices. Now, if you were here when I spoke last on Abraham Lincoln, anybody, were you here at that time? Oh, I got it. I could do the whole thing again. You wouldn't know the difference. Wonderful. Well, the Gettysburg Address that you know, which is not Everett's speech, but Lincoln's, has been on paper for 150 years and has been poured over by numerous scholars and books, many books written about this one little nine-sentence speech has somehow so captured us that it has become our national prayer, our national pledge. And I have to stop myself because I can really sing a song about why it is good. And that was my other speech. Why is this good? And I hope I answered that. But today I'm not going to talk about why it's good. I'm going to talk about the delivery and the voice of these great speakers, because that's where you come in. That's why you're in this audience. Is there something in what they did that you can learn and apply to your own speaking? And I hope that is so. I have two sources to turn to understand what Lincoln might have sounded like. We're blessed with a wonderful historian, Harold Holzer, who's written over 40 books on Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War. So he knows a thing or two. And he's a man who's dedicated his life to poring over all of the records, the news accounts, the interviews, everything from that period to find out what people knew about Lincoln and his speaking. So this is the source from which I draw some of my insight. Now, he interviewed William Herndon. Does the name ring bells with any of you? No, Lincoln? Okay. Well, he was Lincoln's law partner, and certainly a man in a position to say a lot about Lincoln. And his first observation about Lincoln, which, Rick, I think you may be interested in, teacher of public speaking as you are, has to do with his use of gesture. And here's what he said. Lincoln didn't saw wood or swat bees. He didn't saw wood or swat bees. Do you like, can you use that, Rick? So no gestures. He kept himself completely still. And he also did not roam around the stage when he talked, like Rick likes to do, and sometimes I like to do. And here's how they described it. And of course, I'm giving you these examples because I love this language. Now, we don't talk this way anymore. I think it'd be a lot of fun if we did. But listen how Herndon described the fact that Lincoln doesn't walk around. You could put a silver dollar in between Lincoln's feet at the start of a speech, and it would still be there, undisturbed, at the end. How long has it been since we've even seen a silver dollar? I don't know. But I love that imagery to get across the fact that he'd plant his feet, and there he was, and he'd open up and talk. A little different from what we would teach today, Rick, would it be? Yes, I would think so. Now, the topic of Lincoln's speech is a fascinating one. And if you have read anything, you've probably heard some unkind words. You know, we tend to want to say a deep bass baritone, like rolling thunder of authority. No. They say it's a high voice, a shrill voice, tense, squeaky. I've read words like that. You think, oh no, not Abraham. Say it isn't so. Well, I'm not sure that it was so. Now, Holzer, as I said, had done this huge research on things that were said about Lincoln. And he says, one of the only things that can be said with certainty is that Lincoln was a tenor. His voice was in the higher male range, maybe a little more shrill than other people. But here's an interesting phrase for me. People said that his voice carried into crowds beautifully. Do you ever wonder, how could those people with no amplification, and you got over 10,000 of them, how could they have heard it? Well, see, I don't believe they all did. But if they heard anything, it was because his voice carried beautifully. And here's what Holzer says, where I start getting the giggles as a voice coach. Just because the tone was high doesn't mean it wasn't far-reaching, he says. Well, it carried because it was high. Okay, turn it around. That's the reason it carried, because ambient sound in the world, in your world, the world of traffic, of restaurant noise, of people talking, that's ambient sound. It's the sound we live in. A tenor voice, or a soprano voice, even better, has higher frequencies in it that will go over the noise and reach out to people, whereas the individual with the nice deep voice will get completely blotted out by the noise of the world. So it's an advantage to have the tenor voice in public speaking. And it's a huge mistake to tuck your voice down into your throat and try to use your lower register and perhaps sound like a very mighty, strong man, because this voice does not carry. Whereas this voice does. So if you want to get it out there, you want to use the extra projection to have the higher tones in your voice. Now, what did Lincoln's voice sound like? We have another source. And that source is Robert Todd Lincoln. That's Abraham's son, who was in his early 20s when his father was killed in 1865. Now, Robert Todd saw Raymond Massey play Abraham Lincoln on stage in the early 1920s. Raymond Massey, any old people in here who know who Raymond Massey is? Okay, all right. Well, Raymond Massey was the Lincoln actor of his time. And he really made a whole career playing Lincoln. And you can see a wonderful film, and it's Abraham Lincoln in Illinois. Is that right, Rick?
Mm-hmm.
And you can get it on Netflix or you can buy it. And it's actually a darn good film, I think made in 1940, and I think it's worth seeing. Now, Robert Todd Lincoln said it was uncanny the way that Raymond Massey sounded like his father. Okay, am I clear on this? Here's Robert Todd Lincoln, the son of Abraham Lincoln, listening to Raymond Massey playing Lincoln, the father, on stage, and the son saying, "Boy, does that sound like my dad." He has really, what was his language? He was spot on with that. So I think, well now, if we could listen to Raymond Massey, maybe we'll get an inkling of what Lincoln might have sounded like. Would you like to do that? Well, let's do that right here. It just so happens.
This is the complacent policy of indifference to evil. And that policy I cannot but hate. I hate it because of the monstrous injustice of slavery itself. I hate it because it deprives our republic of its just influence in the world, enables the enemies of free institutions everywhere to taunt us as hypocrites, causes the real friends of freedom to doubt our sincerity.
Okay. Do you like that voice? I think we could live with that. But let's jump ahead now. Let's jump ahead 100 years exactly. And hear the voice of Martin Luther King, another one of our great communicators and certainly known for his voice. But I'm going to have you listen to two different recordings of Martin. I'm going to play one now, and I'm going to be asking you to think about, how would I describe this voice? What do I know about the person and the setting just from the sound of his voice. And frankly, it doesn't matter that you hear what he says. The content is not important here. It's the sound of the voice that I'm interested in you listening to.
My dear fellow clergymen, while confined here in the Birmingham City Jail, I came across your recent statement calling my present activities unwise and untimely. Seldom do I pause to answer criticism of my work and ideas.
Okay. What did that voice tell you? He sounds tired, you think? What else?
Depressed.
The words sound just word by word strung together. Give me a little bit more about what you're... Okay. And I would say that's because he's reading a letter and not just talking. That's the letter from the Birmingham jail that is pretty famous. Any other feelings here? Well, let me help you here. Okay, you're sure feeling low energy from this. Well, of course, the guy's in jail, isn't he? There is that. Okay?
Inertia.
Boy, lots of negative kinds of feelings here. You're hearing a low baritone bass voice, aren't you? Is he giving a public speech here, or is he in conversation or just talking? Just conversation, just coming out. So you're hearing the voice of a very relaxed person just trying to read a letter. Now I'm going to have you listen to another clipping here and try to keep the feeling of this, the one you just heard, in your mind while you listen to this.
I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
What's the difference? We hear an energy. The first recording, he has a fundamental frequency of vibration in his vocal cords of 100 cycles per second, you know, more or less, okay? The second one, he doubles it, 200. He's gone up an octave in his pitch. You hear him go from a baritone, bass baritone, to a tenor when he spoke. Think about it. You didn't process that consciously, did you? But if you go back in your memory here, in interest of time, I don't want to take Rick's time, that was a huge jump in pitch level, besides other attributes of speech. So when he got in front of the public and he needed to get that message out, bam, up he is as a tenor, because he needs to have that voice go out there in a clear and captivating way with solid tonal support, because that voice just keeps rolling out so that you hear everything that he has to say. Whereas you had a little trouble with the first one, didn't you? Well, just take home today that the sound of your voice is a profound indicator of who you are, your temperament, your energy, your attitudes. It matters. And don't spend so much time on the words or your PowerPoint, but take a good listen to the sound of your voice, because it sets a message, doesn't it, that people will respond to more than anything else. Okay. Let me see if I need to do here. Are there people in here who have been getting any difficulty with being heard, with projection? Can I see your hands here? Well, I would love to have a volunteer, or maybe two volunteers who'll do a little exercise with me right now. Somebody willing to do it? Okay, madam, I'd love to have you. Sir, please, will you jump up real quick and get to the back of the room. We're just going to talk together. Come. Okay, I'll start with you, sir. And I'm going to give up my... Go ahead and go back. I'm going to give up my microphone so we are equal here. And would you introduce yourself to me, be in a conversation with me now?
Yes, hello. My name is Eric Rasmussen.
And what brought you here today, Eric?
The combination of Lincoln and MLK as public speakers is just too hard to reach.
Have you done any studying of either of those people, or is your interest mostly in the speaking part?
Mostly in the speaking part.
Okay. And how about you, ma'am? What brings you here today? Talk to me.
I'd like to learn how to be more relaxed when I speak in front of groups. And I've also done acting, and sometimes people can't hear me well. And also, Lincoln and Martin.
Now, let me point out what you are observing here. Could you hear them? Did they have a projection problem? Why? No, they didn't. I could hear them very clearly. Why did you think they had a problem? Somebody said yes.
It was difficult to understand what they were actually saying.
Well, but they, their voice got up here, is the point. Okay, that's what I want to say is, you all actually do know how to project your voice. You learned it in elementary school out on the playground. Okay? Your outdoor voice. So when they are in relationship with me, they will automatically adjust the breath pressure and the vocal tonicity to raise the intensity of their voice. As long as you think of talking to me, you know how to do it. Now what will kill that is if you are trying to talk about, talk to an individual in the back of the room demonstrating their knowledge of how to project their voice over the when you read, when you just talk to the people in front, okay? But if you mentally always talk to the people in the back, you don't have to go take a projection lesson. You know how to do this. You know. You were able, when you were on first base, to yell back over to third base. You knew how to get your voice there. Well, you can do that here, now. So physically, I think anybody in this room could make themselves heard in just this kind of situation, don't you? Okay. Physically. Psychologically is another thing. Whether you are willing to take command of a room this size by letting your voice spread out and letting yourself command that much space. So my job as a speech coach is to determine if it's a physical problem with low breath support or is it a psychological refusal to really assume a leadership role and make darn sure your voice is carried out to the people there. So for you two, what you need to take home today is that you need to have this intention in your head. If I'm going to talk, I'm going to be heard. If I'm not heard, it doesn't matter what I say. Okay? You're just wasting everybody's time and feeling yours. So always keep your head up, talk to the people in the back of the room, keep your face available for people, because what you can't hear, you can sometimes see on the face. Matter of fact, that's how we hear. We put the two together. Now that's all you need for projection. So, we all take that home today? Good, I hope so. So, Rick, you were going to talk to us about how things may have changed in the public speaking world.
Do you want your speakers to come back to their chairs? Or are they sitting back?
Come back. I don't know, I kind of like having them back.
Let's give them a round of applause for volunteering.
Yeah.
In Julian's introduction, he mentioned that we have a speech communication training business, and we certainly do training in public speaking. But as I look back at what we do, what really excites me about it is not that. we're really in the business of confidence. And confidence building can happen on the phone or in person or in many different ways. We work with people who come in often damaged by childhood experiences with public speaking in schools or whatever. And in a few days with video and good coaching, we can turn them into really confident people. And that is what's so thrilling to me about this work. And so when Carol invited me to participate with her today, we have always used Martin Luther King as an example. And I want to tell you a little bit about why and make some comparisons between these two monumental speakers. Because if you think about it, the Gettysburg Address was to the 19th century what the I Have a Dream speech was to the 20th century. And both of those speeches together may be the most influential speeches ever in this country. It's absolutely huge. So what's similar about these two speakers? There's some fascinating things that we can take away from it. One is, and I know we have some young people here who are preparing for a speech contest, but this works for any of us. If you look at these speakers, what they're saying is, it's not about me. It's about a principle. And there's always that sense of self-diminishing a little bit with Lincoln and so forth. People will not long remember what we say here. They will not note what we say. And then the guy who was doing a eulogy for Lincoln a few years later said, yeah, they've remembered it immediately. In fact, they've remembered it forever. And in fact, your talk is more important than the battle. But the point is that oftentimes these folks are diminishing their own impact, but talking about the principle that we are all here for. So that's point number one, is that I think if we speak to people in a larger sense, that really draws us to and we're all engaged in this higher level operation. Another thing that both of them do is something that the academics call anaphora, and that means the repetition of one phrase again and again. I've given you a handout, and I'd like you now to take it out if you would. And I have given you the reprint of two of Martin Luther King's talks. And in this, you can read it later, but in this, you will see his repetition. Yeah, you folks over here, I'm sorry I ran out of handouts, but I do have the most important part we're getting to, so you've got that. So don't worry, we're coming. What you'll see here is the repetition of a phrase. I have a dream was repeated 9 times in 7 minutes. So you go back, you look at that thing, you count them up. I've got them counted up for you there. 9 times in 7 minutes. That's 4 words that may have in some sense passed the civil rights bill, passed the voting rights bill. One man, 4 words, 9 times in 7 minutes. Fascinating. Now, I'm a bit of a kind of a theory buff. I like to kind of look at this stuff. And so the other day I'm working with my classical music and I'm putting some stuff together. And I got Beethoven's Fifth. Can anybody tell me the repeated theme in that song? Ba 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 ba. Okay. Now, so I'm thinking, well, that's interesting. Look at that, huh? Okay. Now this gets a little eerie now. So you may start levitating. It may sound a little bit weird. So I started looking at this stuff, and I realized that Martin Luther King said 4 words, I have a dream, 9 times in 7 minutes. And we remember it as the most powerful talk of the 20th century, perhaps. Ba, 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 ba. That may be the most known phrase from all of classical music. Guess how long it is? 7 minutes. So Beethoven says ba, 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 9 times in 7 minutes. And I'm thinking, oh my God. This is the key to understanding the human psyche. So, you guys, when you're doing your speech, say something. Make sure your talk's no longer 7 minutes. Say it 9 times. I'm just kidding. But you get the idea here. There's something fascinating about this repetition. And we see it not only from orators. And we see it everywhere. We see it in advertising. We see it in movies. Think of the movie... I'm thinking of Show Me the Money. What's that movie called?
Jerry Maguire.
Show Me the Money. Keep saying it. Show Me the Money. We have Winston Churchill. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing. We shall fight in the fields. We shall fight in the hills. This morning, I'm watching the news. Obama is giving a talk, a graduation talk at the Naval Academy. This is the best trained Navy, the best led Navy, the best financed Navy in the history of our country. So we see it all the time, is people get a main idea and they keep hammering away at it. So you don't give it up. Winston tastes good. People that said that were sort of my hair color, but that ad hasn't been out. That ad hasn't been out for 25 years. We just don't leave home. So it's this repetition, this constant thing. And so you'll hear speakers of all kinds use this. Lincoln, for example, in the Gettysburg Address. We just heard this from Carol. In a larger sense, we cannot dedicate. We cannot concentrate. We cannot hollow this ground. Of the people, by the people, for the people. So you might think, as you put your talks together, figure out what is your main idea, and then let them know. Keep hammering away on it. So we have built this into our speech training, and I would like to have you turn to page 4, I guess it is, in our little handout, and you'll see this thing called a presentation plan. Now, we happen to call it the core message. So what is the main idea that you are trying to get across in your presentation? And the shorter it is, the better. Because if you give somebody a big, complex sentence and you think they're going to remember it, they're not. Because in today's world, of course, people are engaged with other things. They're very busy. One of the executives that I interviewed for my book, Speaking Up, Surviving Executive Presentations, he pulled out his cell phone and he said, if you don't tell me what you're here for in 30 seconds, I'm gone. You see, right here, I have access to the internet. I have access to my email. I have access to Angry Birds. And all of this is more interesting than your slides. So you got 30 seconds. So this idea of you want to get right to the main point that you're trying to get to and keep it simple. So right there, I've given you the outline, and I want to have you take 1 minute of our precious time together. And you will see in that first box up here, it says core message, core message. Now, that's repeated 3 times. This is about a 2-minute talk we're usually doing with this outline, but it works for much longer talks. I would like you right now to take out a pen and think about a business talk or even a personal talk that you might be giving. And I'd like you to write in under 10 words what your takeaway message is. Okay, so be creative, make it up. Doesn't have to be accurate right now or any of that. But just, I want you to write down what would be your main idea in less than 10 words. And then we're going to share it with a partner. I'm going to give you 1 minute. Ready? Go. Okay, I'd like you to turn to the person sitting next to you, and sometimes there might be 3 people, but 2, just turn to the person next to you, and I would like you to tell that person what the talk is about and what your main, simple to remember, core message is, just like I have a dream. Ready, go. All right, let me get you back. Quickly. Who heard a really great core message from their partner? Yes, please, what was it?
Bioremediation. It's saving the planet and saving you money.
That's true. Stand up so everybody can hear it at the back. Just one more time. Blast it out. Thank you. Yes, absolutely. Well, that takes a longer speech. We have to figure out point number one and point number two. The idea here, the takeaway I hope you will stick in your brain, is that if you make your message fairly simple and you repeat it again and again, it's going to be enormously helpful. The other thing you can bring along would be a prop, can help a lot, or a story. Now, I use the little wig, the beard thing, just for the fun of it. But imagine if there might be a prop or some example of what you're talking about that people can physically see. That would be great. The other thing is a story could work. A story will help, make it sure that it's short. And be loose on your feet. One of the things the executives told us is you have to be light on your feet. Don't come in with your big PowerPoint and expect us to hang with you for 20 minutes as you lecture to us about your topic. One of the things that's most fascinating about the Martin Luther King talk, it was impromptu. It was impromptu, folks. What happened was, this is fascinating, is he's on the platform and the Southern Christian leadership had given him 7 or 8 minutes to do his talk. And he was wrapping up, kind of getting to the end of his talk, and Mahalia Jackson, you know, the gospel singer, was on the podium with him. She turned to him and she yelled at him, "Tell him about the dream, Martin."
He wasn't getting boring.
He was a little boring, a little wonky. Now, he had done parts of this talk before, but you watch the video when you see this, because he's reading his talks, approved, Southern Christian leaders, approved. Tell him about the dream. End of looking at the notes. And he looks up almost like he's being inspired to do this thing. Imagine using some of that language. I'm going to show you. This is a picture of the podium that day with showing you who and where Mahalia Jackson was sitting right in front of him. So pass that around. I just want you to take a look at that. So in a sense, Abraham Lincoln was to Edward Everett as... Wait, where's my? I had this really great thing. I just lost it. Where was it? Oh, okay, yeah. Edward Everett was to Lincoln at Gettysburg as part one of the I Have a Dream speech was as to part two. Part two was completely impromptu, and that's what makes it so even more amazing. I want to talk about two quick things, and then we're going to open it up for some Q&A. We have the raffle, and we have your ending. Sure. How many of you use visual aids with your talks, like PowerPoint? Show of hands. How many have been bored to tears with PowerPoint? Did I say show? There's nothing wrong with PowerPoint. PowerPoint's a great tool. So is Keynote for the Apple. What's wrong is how we use it. And so the executives that I interviewed for the book said, if somebody needs their PowerPoint, I don't think they know what they're talking about, and they don't get the money. So we've heard about, death by PowerPoint, ha, ha, ha. We've seen it with mid-level executives who wrecked their careers by going into senior decision makers and showing PowerPoint slides and not being able to talk off the slides. So be very careful how you use the slides. When you do use them, here's a big takeaway. This is a very concrete takeaway. When you have the slide up on the screen, hit the B key on the keyboard. Hit the B key on the keyboard. Does anybody know what that does?
Blank.
It blanks the screen. Amazing. Why would you want the screen to go blank? The focus is off the screen, and now we're having a conversation about something important. Hit the B key again, comes right back. And by the way, when you have visuals up on a screen, walk back to the screen. Don't stand at the computer, which means you've got to get a remote. Get one of these little remotes. They're really great. You're back at the screen, and you're using a mechanical pointer to show people what you're talking about. Not a laser. We did a survey recently with 50 people. Had a person come up and do it with the hand, with the laser, and then with the pointer. 100% of those people preferred the mechanical pointer. It's a very cool, it's not a weapon, you don't wave it around, you don't. We had one guy, he was looking at slides going, "So as you can see here, So use a pointer. Don't overuse the PowerPoint though, because it can be a killer. So wrapping up, I just want to say this. If you were going to schedule a meeting with Martin Luther King, or with Abraham Lincoln, they would respond to you just like the executives in all of these tall buildings would. And here's how it would go. I know you're supposed to get 15 minutes. Something's come up, you have five. What's your point? And that's Martin Luther King talking to you because he's a very busy person. So is Abe Lincoln. Say, look, I've got a civil war to run here. What's your point? And one of the things we found is these executives want us to get right to the point and don't waste their time. So this old thing about, you know, building rapport, hi, Bob, how's it going? How's the wife and kids? Let me tell you about summer vacation. And gone. The higher up we go in the organization, the less they're interested in that. I did some calculations. If you look at a $5 billion company and you take the five people that run that thing, the CFO, the CIO, the CEO, all that, those C-level guys, and you add up all their salaries and benefits, you walk up to the table to present to them, that costs the shareholders $30,000 an hour. That's the salaries that they're making. No wonder they want us to get to the point. Plus, they don't have a lot of job security. The average length that a C-level executive stays in the position is 23 months. Boom, they're out the door. You look at Silicon Valley, you see it at HP, you see it at Yahoo, it all the time. So when you think about your speaking skills, I'd like you to take away this idea of simple message, repeated, don't over-depend on visual aids, and the farther you move up the chain, make sure that you get to the point and you don't waste their time.
I wanted to close this part of our presentation with a little more from Holzer, and then we're going to have a drawing for our copy of our book, his book and my book. So we have your we've gotten your business cards, and if you haven't, get it in. You better get it in quick. But
do you want to do questions before you do that, Raph? Or
well, we could. What do you recommend?
Well, I'm thinking if we've got a couple of minutes here.
All right.
I just wondered about, because we had the mic set up.
All right, then I'm going to keep my final paragraph and have somebody get up to the microphone who might have a question.
Yeah, any.
And let us know what you would like us to talk about. Get thee to the microphone. This way. This, closer.
As I understand it, the mic is primarily for the listening audience. So, but,
Well, thank you very much, both of you. You've had some good entertainment here, but I would like you to just say a few words about a couple of public speakers who are not dead, but not quite as old as the two you did, and that would be Jacqueline and John Kennedy. They had very different styles. They were both very effective. Could you say a few words about them?
Who was the first? Jacqueline?
Yes, Mrs. and
Mrs.
Mr.
Kennedy.
Kennedy.
Wow. Do you know anything about Jacqueline Kennedy's?
Well, she had a soft, breathy voice, which always suggests intimacy, but she did it with such a tasteful way. We didn't go in the same direction that we would go when we hear Marilyn Monroe use the same style for herself. As for JFK, he was perhaps the last, now I have to pick my words here, educated, highly educated, classically educated, and articulate, groomed speaker that we have had. So his language harks back to an age of higher standards for public oratory.
One of the people that is one of my favorites that I'd recommend you look at is Steve Jobs and his Stanford graduation speech. It's all over the YouTube, and it is stunning. And speak about no gestures. You could have put the silver dollar between his feet. He reads it. He used almost no gestures. I mean, not exactly what we recommend, right? But the speech is absolutely compelling, and it's one of the things that's cited all the time as one of the, not only one of the best commencement speeches, but one of the best business speeches. And it's very personal. Three stories. I'm just going to tell you three stories about my life. Yes, please.
You two both spoke well of what to do, project, stories, props, so forth. What about the don'ts? I've noticed that I oftentimes can't hear what a person is saying because they add so many just I want to's, other phrases that disempower what they're saying. Do you have anything to speak
on
that point?
These are those word fillers?
Not really word fillers, like to fill the space, but rather literally to disempower. It's as if I don't want to be too pushy, so I'll say, just think about rather than think about.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want me to take that? Yes. You're talking about empty language, that you avoid the strong subject-predicate structure of a sentence and try to soften it by adding things in front of it and in back of it. Like, well, I was just thinking that maybe we should have lunch now instead of we should have lunch now. That sort of language, I think, is what you're talking about. There's softeners, and the person is avoiding the assumption of power of making a strong declarative sentence, much like that same person probably would have trouble projecting their voice to the back of the room. It has to do with their own self-esteem, their self-concept as a powerful person who can handle whatever a larger territory might bring them.
Okay? I would add uptalk to that, too.
Well, you know, I could, but that's actually a larger topic. But let me go on that because Rick brings up one of the most frequently mentioned things. And I'm talking about a style of speaking, and some of you may have heard it. So when a person talks, they're getting to a particular point when they need to say something definite. And you, okay. What I just did is, when you hear it, when you finally get it, it's very irritating. Okay. Now, linguistically, it's doing a lot of work. It's a perfectly good style in that it's asking you to be in relationship with the speaker. It's asking you to go, yes, dear, that's right. Yeah, that's what you're doing. Okie dokie. So it's the style of speaking that says, can this conversation be us instead of me just telling you things, number one. Number two, it's a style of a particular age group, of a particular time and place that marks, this is the way me and my folks talk. So it's a stylistic marker for a generation or a place. Like we might say that's very Valley Girl. Well, we all have our own dialects that represent our people that we bond with. Third, see, I warned you. They don't get a chance. Okay. Okay. Third, the linguistic function of the upward intonation, you tell me, listen to this. I'm going downtown to do some grocery shopping, get my dry cleaning, take the dog to the vet, and then I'll go home. You heard three up. Now, what did that up tell you about the structure? More is coming. You know, I'm not done. I'm doing a series now. So that's why I need 5 minutes rather than 5 seconds to answer that question. Yes, sir.
So, Rick, I took your speaking up course a couple months ago and found it incredibly useful. And when you spoke of the beginning that you teach confidence, you don't necessarily teach speaking. I'm wondering what techniques you would recommend, because I work with an organization with a lot of software developers that sit at computers all day and necessarily do not react or work well with humans. So they don't necessarily need to speak publicly, but we would like to encourage them to speak publicly. So what techniques would you recommend for them?
What activities for them? We were talking earlier about Toastmasters, and one of the things that we recommend to people who are just kind of getting started and they really want the confidence and the support is that Toastmasters is a terrific way to do that. There are clubs all over the Bay Area. I'll bet there's 300 clubs in the Bay Area. And they meet weekly. So for people who are kind of timid, and they're extremely supportive, and most of the clubs, I mean, I've been to a number of these clubs over the years, and they're full of interesting people who are growing and building their careers. So in addition to a class like ours, certainly Toastmasters would be a great way to go.
I agree with that. I use them for a lot of my folks, too. And I ask them, go out and try two or three of them. I mean, they're so ubiquitous. They're like an AA. Try to find the group that you feel good with. That's the right age group or experience level. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I'd like to thank you both. It's been a wonderful, inspiring talk. I wish you could teach a lot of speakers how to speak better. I mean, even
So do we.
Even speakers that come here that give fascinating talks, I often have trouble, even when they're using a microphone, hearing them. And often people, at the end of the sentences, it just sort of drifts.
They fade out.
Uh-huh. Fades, yes.
Yeah. You know, let me...
And also, one other thing. I speak five languages, and I've come to finally, in the last couple of decades, really appreciate the English language. It is so rich and so beautiful, but people are just, it's not being taught well, and people are just trashing the language and the grammar. And even educated people or on television, you know, speakers, they're using adverbs so often instead of adjectives and things like that.
Let me respond.
Hurt my ears.
Let me respond.
Go ahead.
We just got a few minutes here. We want to do our drawing.
But one
of the issues is that people often get into the public limelight because of something they've done in life. Maybe they've been written a book, or they've been a coach of a Super Bowl team, or they're a big CEO or something. They may not necessarily be good speakers, but people come to hear them because of whatever it is. I heard the son of the founder of Motorola, old man, walked up to the microphone, 80 years old. He mumbled, looked down, and I can almost tell you everything he said to this day. Didn't use any of the things we teach, but his content was so powerful. So sometimes people may be great and charismatic, and other times they may just be full of good content, and we have to be able to kind of spread that around. Let's do your wrap
yes.
up, because we're going to have this
okay.
raffle really quickly and get you out here on time. So.
Okay. I found a paragraph that I wanted to remember to share with you as you go out the door today. As you can spend so much time getting into specific techniques of presentation and speaking. When Holzer, and this was Harold Holzer, the researcher, the Lincoln researcher, was researching his 2004 book, Lincoln at Cooper Union, he noticed an interesting consistency in the accounts of those who attended Lincoln's speaking tour in February and March of 1860. They all seemed to say, for the first 10 minutes, I could not believe the way he looked, the way he sounded, and his accent. Now, again and again, we find this in the literature. Gawky, 6'4", skinny, ugly. No one has ever called him handsome. Okay? And then he got this tall hat on, which was the mark of the country lawyer, by the way. That's how you knew he was an attorney. And he'd wear these white gloves on his great big old hands, otherwise he's in black. He cut a grotesque figure. And he took his Kentucky accent to Washington and humiliated the finer folk that this log cabin country bumpkin was representing this nation. You cannot imagine how embarrassed they were that such a man was going to be our president. And that's what people saw when old Abe would get up there and start to talk. They would be taken aback. First 10 minutes, I couldn't believe the way he looked, the way he sounded, his accent. But after 10 minutes, the flash of his eyes, the ease of his presentation overcame all doubts, and I was enraptured. I'm paraphrasing now, but there is 10 minutes of saying, what the heck is that? And then all of a sudden, it's his ideas, his personal integrity, that supersede whatever flaws there were. So it was the quality of his mind, of his ideas, that overcame whatever little quirks he had or you may have. So don't let the technique scare you or hang you up. If your thinking's good, if your message is sound, just give it 10 minutes. Okay, thank you.
Carol and I will be around to sign books or ask any questions you might have. And now, as we're getting ready, we're going to have the drawing for the free book. It can either be Carol's book or my book. And I'm going to ask my assistant, Kelly Gulbranson, to come up and draw. Please, could I have a little drum roll? Everybody, very dramatic, very dramatic. Here she comes. Okay, here we go. Yell it out. Who is it?
Tyler Caldwell.
Tyler. Tyler, stand up. Let's see you. Round of applause for Tyler. All right. Thank you, everybody. It's been really fun.